Transfer complete.
Hello and welcome to Subspace Transmissions, the podcast where two Trek fans step into the arena and tackle the best, worst, weirdest, wildest, and everything in between that Star Trek has to offer. I'm Cam Smith, and joining me on the bridge,
this is Tyler Orton, just pondering how it's hard to imagine that we've been doing this podcast for more than 3 years, Cam.
How the directions your life takes.
I know. I think it's time for your own podcast.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Are we going to have a fight over the brand name Subspace Transmissions?
You can have Subspace. I'll take Transmissions.
Sounds good to me.
Okay.
So this
Actually, you get the better end of the deal.
No. I'm happy with that deal.
Anyway,
so
Cam.
We are doing, for this week's conundrum, our annual check-in with the franchise,
yeah.
The current state of Star Trek, this time 2017.
It's fascinating where we were just a year ago and even the year before that when we started doing this. Do you recall how we started to get going with this current state of Star Trek that we do pretty much every year now?
Well, yes, because we recently, a friend of the show, Jesse Okendo, recommended to us that we listen to our What to Expect from Star Trek 3 episode, and just to hear what we thought that Beyond would be before there was a Beyond. And while we were pretty wildly off in every conceivable way.
What else is new?
Yeah. At a certain point, I just make this side note randomly about how we should do an episode about the state of the franchise.
Yeah.
And so it all began with that podcast episode.
So I should also say off the top, we'll be discussing Star Trek Discovery here. And I think we should apologize. We're always pretty diligent about getting into kind of the breaking news. When Leonard Nimoy passed away, we had an emergency podcast then. We've had instant trailer reactions to Star Trek Beyond. Unfortunately, when this trailer dropped, I was nowhere to be found, Cam.
Yeah, no. I looked. So, I was like banging on your front door.
No, in all fairness, I was abroad, that is out of the country. So was not able to get to it until today. We had a couple in the bank while I was off traversing the world. But I'm glad we can touch on it now. Cam, why don't we just start overall thoughts on this, and then we can get kind of into the smaller, more granular sort of elements of this trailer. But overall, what did you come away thinking after you saw the Star Trek Discovery trailer?
My feeling was going into
that's just it.
My feeling going to the trailer was that I wanted to see something confident that gave me a feeling like this new iteration of Star Trek really knew what it was doing, because there was a lot of question marks hanging over Star Trek Discovery.
Mm-hmm.
And there was question marks hanging over the first J.J. Abrams Star Trek, and to me his trailers showed that we weren't sure maybe how the movie would be, but it showed that he had a very definite stamp as to what he was going to make this universe. And so I was looking for something along the same lines with this, because it is a teaser, it's not a full trailer. And my takeaway was kind of going like it didn't make me more confident.
Okay.
At all.
But I believe that same friend you mentioned at the top, Jesse Okendo, he also sent us links to all the previous trailers for the new series. So whether it was Encounter at Farpoint, Emissary, Caretaker, Broken Bow, Cam, were any of them good? Would any of them have made you excited to see what was coming up next in Star Trek?
Well, I will say the Emissary, the DS9 premiere trailer back in the day was a big deal. Big deal, like at least in my school.
But this teaser that Jesse sent us, it was people's faces. Right?
No, yeah, I agree.
It wasn't good.
It was also a different world then.
Though.
Nowadays we live in hype culture where you have to put out trailers that grab the attention of people, because there's a sea of them every single week.
Yeah, I can't disagree with that. Which one do you think was the worst out of all those teasers that we recently viewed?
Maybe the Enterprise?
Yeah.
It was pretty underwhelming.
That really bad, like, rock music playing on it.
And, yeah.
It's kind of embarrassing, but for anybody out there, you need to watch the Voyager one, where the guy cannot pronounce any of the characters' names. It was quite amazing, and he kept calling it the Starfleet.
That's not correct?
No, it's not.
Oh, geez.
But yeah, the narrator there was exquisite. But I would say, look, out of all the teasers we've seen, I think Discovery is far and away the best one. I know it's a different era now.
Overall, damning with faint praise.
Overall, my instant reaction after seeing Star Trek Discovery was I'm not as frightened as I was just a moment ago.
Right.
So how many times do you think you've watched this teaser by this point, Cam?
About 5.
Really?
Yeah.
Yikes, okay.
Why? How many of you?
I don't want to admit at this point. No, yeah. Probably I'd say 15, 20.
You know, the sad part is, honestly, the trailer to me was like, eh, looks fine. And yeah. It didn't interest me enough to rewatch. I have, now, for comparison's sake, I have rewatched the Thor Ragnarok trailer probably like 25 times.
Oh, see, I've only watched that one once.
And I would say I'm far more invested in Star Trek than I am Thor.
Okay, well, maybe those worlds can collide sooner rather than later.
Yeah, no kidding.
We can get into it a little bit later on in this show.
Cam. No kidding. But that just, to me, tells me that two things that I'm interested in, one is marketing a lot better to me than the other.
Okay, but maybe it's just a marketing thing. There's nothing in this trailer that makes me, and I know other fans are going to disagree, that yeah. makes me want to just scream and run out the door, like saying like it's just a travesty to the franchise or
no.
anything like that. I'm.
I wish it looked like a travesty because that would be interesting to talk about.
Yeah, look.
One or the other.
If the worst part about this is that it looks a little...
Generic,
yeah. then I can live with that. But sure. I think there's enough to dissect. But Cam, I think there's a couple broad issues that came out of this that maybe we should touch upon. First of all, let's start with maybe the Klingons.
What are you talking about? What Klingons?
You think they're perfect the way they are.
Yeah.
No, obviously there's a lot of fan reaction to... And I assume that these aliens that they were looking at were Klingons.
Right. They have engaged with the Klingons.
Well, yeah. But that could have been other
sure.
ships. You know, I'll say this about this trailer. It's very confusing.
Yeah.
And there's really no information shared about the story or really who these characters are, except for one guy who is created to be biologically determined to sense death.
That guy's a downer at parties.
Okay. But anyway, with regards to the Klingons, though, let's assume these are the Klingons.
Right.
What do you think of this look for the Klingons?
Oh, I think it stinks. I mean,
yeah.
To me, it looks like they're kind of picking up the baton from the J.J., Abrams universe.
Yes.
Like, they look to me like the Into Darkness ones done on more of a budget.
Okay.
I didn't really care for those ones. These look like the cheaper version.
But I'm still trying to rationalize it in my brain for a long time. I was so looking forward to seeing some old school TOS era Klingons.
Yeah.
Like, I just thought there was something about kind of that look and those costumes that they wore so distinct. And I would buy them as Klingons. They kind of explained their look in the Star Trek Enterprise augments. Or no, there's that follow-up to the augments
yeah.
arc. But they explained the look, essentially, of them and why they had smooth heads. These, I'm still going to hold out hope that those ones make an appearance. And these aliens that we're seeing, if in fact are Klingons, maybe they're Klingons from a different era or something.
Like ancient Klingons
yeah,
or something? Because it looks like we're watching scenes from The Mummy.
Well, there's literally a mummy sarcophagus
yeah.
like in there. On that
Tom
ship.
Cruise was like running by in the background.
Yes.
That joke will only be relevant for about 2 weeks.
Hey, no, you know what? Sophia Boutella's in that, so you got the Star Trek connection.
There we go.
So. So I'm hoping these are not the Klingons. The reason they look so different is because they're not the Klingons we're used to. I particularly don't care for... Look, if there was some other alien, let me ask you this. If there was some other alien, not the Klingons, what would you think of this antagonist's look?
My take would be that they look cheap.
Okay.
Like, to me, they just look like a bad Halloween mask.
Really? Okay.
Which I would not say about a lot of Star Trek makeup or costumes or what have you. Like, when I saw these Klingons, I'm like, they looked bad.
Okay.
Like they look like a fan film production to me.
Hmm. Okay, I didn't have that reaction personally.
Okay.
I think more so that they look kind of like generic scary aliens that we've seen before.
Which gets into that problem we've talked about, how, you know, the ugly aliens are always the bad ones.
Yeah, it's like the worse you look, the worse you are. I'm just like, oh, that's a great message for Star Trek.
And they somehow made the Klingons even uglier.
Yeah. I don't know, there's just something very kind of classic and or maybe it's just nostalgia, I don't know, but there's something so identifiable about the look of the Klingons from TOS and the look of the Klingons from TNG onward.
Yeah, I don't really understand why you would take a drastic step away from that. I can understand refining it, adding, you know, layers of, you know, more modern technique. You can always update things. I don't understand why you would make a drastic change.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
That to me is idiotic.
Which makes me hold out hope that I still have hope that the writers behind it have enough care for the franchise that there's going to be some explanation for this. And based on that trailer, there's still so many question marks about what's going on here.
Yeah.
The other thing we should bring up is the ship that we see in the trailer, it's not actually the Discovery. It's the Shenzhou.
Right.
So we're not even introduced to the Discovery itself in this. And this teaser can only tell us so much, because I think if you're talking about any more, it's going to give away a lot about what the series is all about. And I think they want to have a couple surprises up their sleeve.
I think, honestly, it would have been smarter for the teaser to pick one element of the show and tease that.
Yeah.
Versus kind of throwing in this jumble of, here's some Klingons, here's this new character, here's a ship. You know, it just felt like you were throwing in all these elements without really even making one of them stand out as interesting.
I wonder if what they're essentially doing is, let's say there's marketing for a film that's, and the entire marketing is based all around only the first act of that film.
Right.
And I wonder if this is kind of the same idea here. You know, they don't want to reveal too much, so they'll give you just kind of a taste, which a teaser does. But I think in their effort to keep so much of the story secret, it's creating a lot of confusion, especially among a fan base that, look, there's people that, they get it. The Klingons are going to go have an updated look, and then there's a lot of people that are like, what have you done to my childhood?
Yeah.
You know, this is awful.
Yeah. Well, let's look at some of the positive points. Like, what were the takeaways that you really liked from this teaser?
Okay, so first thing that jumped out, even though I gave you that bad line that Lieutenant Saru, the science officer, delivered about how he's biologically determined for one purpose and one purpose alone.
Yeah.
I dig Doug Jones. I dig the look of this science officer. His line delivery is as good as I think you can have when you have such crappy dialogue.
There's a lot of bad dialogue in this trailer.
You know what? Okay, yeah. So right before...
We're already abandoning the positive.
Well, but right before...
we'll get back to that in a second.
But right before you arrived, I rewatched the trailer again, and I wrote down lines of dialogue, and I was just like, a lot of it was not great.
Yeah. Hopefully they turn out like that I'm a rebel, so we rebel, or whatever, from Rogue One and hits the cutting room floor.
Well, my suspicion is that for a teaser, are you really going to be able to do much dialogue beyond, say, just the expository sort of stuff?
Should they have done dialogue?
Maybe
should have
not,
just
no.
been music with shots of, you know, ships and space, and maybe end with the Klingons or something.
Music with shots in space, I'm down with that. But... Yeah. Okay. Even though the music pick here, I don't know, kind of meh in my opinion. But with regards to other stuff that I dig, I'm intrigued by this whole, by Sarek's involvement here.
Yeah.
It brought up a lot of questions for me, especially with Burnham's lineage. It's kind of implying, and you and I were messaging back and forth after the trailer dropped, that Burnham may have some Vulcan heritage in
right.
her, but and so I like to think that maybe she's on kind of the opposite side of the spectrum of Spock, you know, like a bit of a halvesy, but she's more in tune to her human side, whereas Spock was more in tune to his Vulcan side. So
right.
I'm intrigued by what that means for a character who obviously has internal conflict there.
Yeah, and it's implied in the trailer that she's a great unifier, which I really like too. It's sort of, because we know this show is going to follow this character. More so than probably any other Star Trek series has followed a specific character. I'm
right.
getting that vibe.
I get that vibe as well.
Yeah.
Because all the other series, aside from TOS, have been big ensembles.
Right.
Okay. What stood out to you is some of the highlights, Cam?
I love the uniforms. I think the uniforms are absolutely fantastic.
Okay.
I think you could maybe have quibbles with some of the, maybe the Burman era uniforms if you wanted to. But to me, these are fantastic. And it looks like all the care and attention that didn't go into the Klingon makeup went into those costumes.
They are quite regal.
They are going to be brutal for any cosplayer to to replicate. But I think they're great. And I love, you know, the gold, the silver indicators.
And bronze.
Yeah, and bronze, yeah.
Yeah, which was clever. I never even thought about that. You know, gold means, of course, commands. Silver is now science, medical, and the fans figured out online that bronze would be, you know, operations and engineering and security and all that.
I mean, I don't know how likely it would be that the uniform would jump from the Enterprise uniform to this, to the TOS uniforms in a logical world, but I'm willing to go along on the journey.
They look regal. My one complaint, though, is the, you know, the gold on the side, they look kind of like sequins, and it looks, they're reflective, and I think that looks a little, I don't know, a little 80s to me.
Right.
One curious thing that I didn't notice until somebody pointed out is that those gold sequins, though, they're actually Starfleet Deltas.
Yes.
So I was just like, okay, do you care at all that they're walking around with the Starfleet Delta in that era where it was known to be, you know how every ship had their own insignia in TOS era. I've actually looked at other explanations for that, and it really only pertains, I think, to like one or two other ships, and everything else could be explained away.
Right.
So I'm okay with this personally. Do you care?
No, little loopholes like that I just honestly don't really care about.
Yeah. It's like, what's the big deal? It's like, it's so identifiable with Star Trek. The fact that another ship has been using it, I'm just like, that's fine with me, guys.
Yeah.
Do you also hear about how they have like the command insignia on the Deltas?
No.
Yeah, so it's really cool. If you look closely at the Deltas, you'll see four little bumps on the side that indicate that Michelle Yeoh's character is captain.
Right.
And so there's just like little things. Like you said, they put a lot of thought and detail into the uniforms. What do you think about the, say, the bridge set? We did get a good look at the bridge set. To me, it reminds me very much more of, say, the USS Franklin than any other Starfleet bridge we've seen.
Yeah, well, it definitely looks very much from the modern movie era to me. Like, it doesn't seem like a hard right away from that sort of design sense. But I thought it worked. I don't feel like I've seen enough of it to really give an opinion. Like, I want to see it in action. I want to see characters walking around on the bridge. You know, kind of those longer shots that really let the environment feel lived in. You know, like TOS, TNG, Voyager. We're getting to watch characters just hang out there. And that's where you get a better vibe as to the way it works, you know, as we're cutting from character to character. That's what I can't wait to see.
Where do you fall on the argument about it looks too technologically advanced for the era that it's in?
The prequel problem.
Yeah. I mean, why don't we get into the so-called prequel problem now? Because, you know, there was that same debate happened 17 years ago when Enterprise debuted.
Also the Star Wars prequels.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For me, you can rationalize it however you want. I think it'd be kind of lame to watch this series when they're just using these very cheap, dated-looking consoles.
Yeah. So, well, I mean, I don't want them to be sitting there going like, okay, we have to design these as if this was a show designed in the 1950s.
Yeah.
Because Star Trek, the original, was the 60s. So we got to take the technology back to the 50s. I want cardboard boxes and like light bulbs.
And antennae.
Yeah, and antennae.
Take me to your leader.
Like, yeah, no thanks.
Like you said, we didn't get a great look at it. We got some glimpses of it. Yeah. My suspicion is that we're similar to Enterprise. We're going to have a lot more tactile sort of uses, but we're already seeing like HUDs, heads up displays. We're seeing like holograms, all that sort of stuff. I'm fine with it.
Do you think they're going to have a grappler?
Yes. I did like that little bit of technology we got to see in Enterprise with, like, even though it never followed the laws of physics.
No.
I was just like, okay.
It's like, what is that cable made out of?
It's fascinating to me.
It was.
You know, but I don't think there's going to be a grappler. We never actually saw, like, a tractor beam in action in TOS, did we?
I don't think so.
I don't think we did, yeah.
No, I don't think so.
So, look, I'm okay with the prequel problem, you know, maybe it's interesting. I'm not okay with like the look of the Klingons. Maybe the producers are like, well, we have to update the look of everything.
Yeah.
But for some reason, I'm okay with the look of the technology. I don't know. Maybe there's some cognitive dissonance on my part, but it doesn't necessarily bother me.
You also have to have a certain amount of sympathy with the studio and the producers because if they put out a show that doesn't look good nowadays, you know, that looks clunky, kind of old fashioned. Oh man, there's money on the line. It's got to compete with shows like Battlestar Galactica, the new one, and you know, whatever other, you know, flashy sci-fi is out there on TV. They can't make it look kind of old-fashioned just because
you're not going to attract new
viewers.
Like,
exactly.
None, really.
Star Trek already cuts off a huge section of the population. I don't think they want to cut off more.
Well, I don't know. Do you think, look, I've been hearing this argument like that fans are making, like, oh, you could have just avoided all these problems if it just took place in the 25th century.
Yeah, I've heard that a lot.
What do you think, though? I just wonder if this, they wanted to have it in this era for a very specific reason. So for whatever that reason is, I'm willing to go on that journey.
Yes. I feel the same way. Okay. I mean, I will go there. Anything that allows beloved characters like Harry Mudd to pop up.
Beloved characters, Cam.
But, yeah. Look, when we talked way, way back on the podcast about what we wanted the next Star Trek series to be, and this was a point in time where there was no glimmers of a new Star Trek series.
I think we estimated like it was going to take at least 7 or 8 years or something. And I was just like, wrong we always are, Cam.
But I said I wanted to go to the 25th century.
Yeah.
Or beyond that, whatever. I wanted to leave the 24th behind.
Yeah.
Obviously, I'm not getting that. I mean, I'm interested to see why they chose this era. The fact that they chose 10 years before TOS, to me, means that they have a story they want to tell.
Yes.
I wouldn't get that evidence from the teaser, but I'm willing to still suspend disbelief and say that they have a story they want to tell and that it's going to be a compelling one.
I just say wait for the full trailer and maybe more things will, you know, become clear.
Wait for the series.
Yeah, you know what? I think it's fascinating to see all this negative fan reaction.
Yeah.
Where we saw like 90 seconds.
And really only three characters.
Yeah.
You know, there's a huge cast on this thing. And we only saw Michelle Yeoh, Sonequa Martin-Green, and Doug Jones, really.
Yeah. It also,
and James Frayne as Sarek, I think.
Yeah. And also the actor, is it Chris Orbe, who's playing T'Kuvma, the Klingon. I don't know if you saw the tweet, but they're calling him the Klingon King.
Sure.
So, I don't know. There's some fan reaction saying he should be Chancellor. This is why I'm thinking that these aren't necessarily modern Klingons.
Yeah. And it was interesting because you and I had a bet like back and forth about, you know, is Michelle Yeoh kind of like the celebrity captain who's just going to set up the series and then get the paycheck and get out? And I was looking on IMDb and they list how many episodes each actor's in.
Okay.
I think we can get used to Michelle Yeoh.
Okay. Hey.
Well, you know who else we can get used to?
Doug Jones?
Harry Mudd. He's listed for 9 episodes.
9?
9.
Wow.
So that's more than half season one.
Yeah, because some of the new news that we found out a few weeks ago is that the episode order has been bumped from 13 to 15.
Right.
You don't bump the episode order from 13 to 15 when you're paying about $6 million per episode, you know, unless you have confidence in the series.
Mm-hmm.
So that's giving me more confidence. But who knows how much my tastes in both television and Star Trek in general differ from some CBS exec.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Hey, let me ask you this. What do you think about the look of the series? We talked about, say, the technology, the uniforms, the aliens. What do you think about the overall kind of mise-en-scene or cinematography or just like the special effects here?
I got to be honest, they didn't impress me that much. Mm-hmm. I like the shots of, you know, Michelle Yeoh and Sonequa Martin-Green down on the planets. I like the planetscapes. You know, I'm always excited to see alien worlds that look different.
They actually look like strange new worlds, exactly, as opposed to like a cheap Hollywood studio.
Right.
Yeah.
But I saw a lot of fans complaining online saying it's just doing the visual style of like the J.J. Abrams type of movies on a TV scale, right?
Okay.
And you know what? I'm not against that, because here's the thing. We look at the Berman era. We look at the 60s era. They had their own visual stamp of what those eras were for Star Trek.
Yep.
If this current Star Trek falls into the J.J. Abrams visual look, hey, that's the look of this era. For whatever, you know, in 10 years, 20 years down the road, maybe there'll be a different visual style to Star Trek.
Well,
I'm okay with it looking like the J.J. verse if that's what they want to do. To me, though, it just didn't. It looked like the J.J. verse without the pop, you know, the that extra visual oomph that really made me go like, wow, that looks great.
Well, if only do you think the colors seemed a little bit more saturated?
Yeah.
Okay. What about some of the...
Did it look flat to you, a lot of it? Like, it had that digital sheen to a lot of it?
Yeah. Well, I mean, they're shooting everything on digital nowadays.
Yeah, I know. So, but there's good digital and bad.
Sure.
This was not Steven Soderbergh.
Well, I'll say this didn't blow me away, but I didn't think it looked bad at all.
Okay.
We've never seen Star Trek on TV look this way, like look so cinematic.
Right.
I would say this cinematography looks better than TOS, better than Next Gen era.
TOS?
Yes.
I don't know about that.
I
didn't think I would disagree with that.
Well,
I think I would strongly disagree with that one. But I'll give you the TNG onwards.
TOS looks very, very of its time.
Sure, but when you compare 1960s film to this digital television look, no, not even close.
Well,
to me.
Okay, I say cinematography. Maybe I should say overall look, you know? And I know that's a very kind of... frustrating term, you know, but right. I think this looks far less cheap overall than, say, TOS.
Let me say this. TOS has frames that look to me like things I would want to hang on my wall.
Okay.
There's nothing in anything in this teaser that I would want to hang on my wall.
We're 90 seconds in.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not too afraid.
That's what I'm saying. Specific shots. There's nothing that looks that beautiful to me at all.
What about some of the, not reference to your last sentence, but what are your thoughts overall about some of the space shots that we saw with there's a couple cool shots of, say, like a star with some space dust on it. To me, we haven't really seen Star Trek do that on television before. To me, it looked cool.
Yeah, I like the space shots. I hope they take their cue from the J.J. Abrams movies, where they had they found different ways to shoot space travel.
Yeah,
because with the TOS, Berman era movies, etc., typically they used a lot of the same shots. You know, there was not a lot of variety in how they showed the ships moving through their space. Whereas the J.J. Abrams movies changed that with, like, the warp trails and coming up with new ways to do it. And I'm looking forward to seeing Discovery try to do the same thing.
What do you think about the warp effect? It's very similar to what we saw in Star Trek Beyond. I like it. I do too.
Yeah. No, anything that gives it a little more visual oomph. Because one thing that Star Trek, I think, suffered from that some of the other franchises really nailed was sort of the beauty of moving through space. And, you know, often it was because of budgetary reasons. They just couldn't do what, you know, they maybe wanted to in the 60s and right through to the 90s and early 2000s. But J.J. Abrams, I think, really showed some beautiful traveling through space footage, and Beyond did too with Justin Lin. So I would like to see similar types of tacks taken with this.
I have to say that my favorite shot of space travel that we've seen in Star Trek period, though, was that one very, very wide shot in Star Trek Beyond of the Enterprise, you know, starting to get into that warp bubble.
Right. That was going through my head, too.
Yeah. To me, I just thought that was so beautiful, and I'd never seen it in Star Trek before. I don't ever really seen kind of a space travel shot like that before in cinema period, so it really kind of took me away, and I hope we see similar sort of stuff going forward in Star Trek Discovery.
There's always a ton of imagination in Star Trek, often more imagination than budget.
Yeah.
But I would like to see that imagination extended to the space travel sequences, not just, you know, the aliens of the week or the storytelling. Like, make it a full package.
Okay. Cam, maybe we should... I don't want to dwell on this too much, but I do want to briefly address some of the issues that people are bringing up. And by people, I mean monsters with regards to, like, diversity in Star Trek. And, like, I think that's a very small but very vocal segment of monsters out there that are saying that there's too much diversity. It's all just some PC game where you're featuring two women of color in leadership positions, and people are outraged by this, and people are also complaining you're including a gay member of the crew in the cast as well, and how dare you. I'm just like, to me it seems as if these people don't actually know what Star Trek is. So are they trolls, or do they genuinely believe this? I don't know. I just don't want to think about them too much, but then I feel as if I ignore this sort of stuff, then it's like, am I being complicit in not calling them out on how stupid they are?
Well, the funny thing was, this all this firestorm that was, I'm sure, is a very small handful of fans, at least I like to hope so, who were just very, very vocal. That I actually, when this argument hit, it actually surprised me, because it actually didn't occur to me watching the teaser.
No, I was actually delighted that we actually saw, like, that they had confirmed that it's, like, a woman captain.
Yeah.
And a woman first officer.
But it never even occurred to me. It didn't even pop into my head when I'm watching these two characters interact and essentially starring in that teaser.
Yeah.
That would be what people would be angry about. Like, it never even popped into my head that this was unusual, or that even, like, the fact that I'm seeing something that's maybe a little, thinking a little progressive, right?
Yeah.
That never even popped into my head. I was just like, nope, it's Star Trek. You know, I'm liking what I'm seeing, or I'm not liking what I'm seeing in certain areas with the Klingons. But, you know, it didn't feel to me like they were making any sort of, like, political, you know, like, here we are, this is what we are, damn it, at all. It felt very innocuous, actually.
Well, I think that's the perfect word, though. It felt like Star Trek. It felt innocuous. It just felt like this is reality. It's fascinating that a lot of people were saying, like, why do they have to, like, shove this in our face and blah, blah, blah? And I'm just like, well, you're not shoving anything in your face. But here's the fact. Why are they doing this? Because it reflects reality, though. You know, it's like, it's not unusual to have, like, two women in leadership roles in any sort of situation. And the fact that if you keep going on and keep denying that reality, then it's I can't really get behind it. I have more difficulty suspending my disbelief in something when, right. You know, and I know I'm talking about Star Trek and aliens and all that sort of stuff. But to me, I don't know, this reaffirms that we can exist in an era where TV executives, even TV executives, are going to greenlight efforts to make it a reality.
Right. So. I mean, I have to imagine that these same voices would have been just as vocal when the teaser for, DS9 comes out and there's a black captain, or Voyager and you've got Janeway.
Yeah. You know, like, they just didn't have a platform, you know, 20 years
exactly.
ago.
Exactly.
Okay.
I think those voices are always going to be there, and the best you can do is just ignore them.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, fortunately, when it comes to a lot of artists in Hollywood, there are more on the liberal side, so they're going to hopefully be a little more open-minded with this sort of decision-making.
Yeah. So let's move on from those jerks. I think this will die out, but I think there's always going to be those like jerks hanging around, yeah, lurking, lingering on Facebook groups, what have you. But
right, don't worry, they got Harry Mudd. They're good.
Yeah. I think most of you listeners know my thoughts about Harry Mudd. But
Cam, I think we all do.
Haven't I had evolving thoughts on Harry Mudd or something?
Well, there was a clip, yes, in the Star Trek 3 episode we did way back, episode 28, where you referred to the casting of Sung Kang as Harry Mudd as a potential delight.
Okay. Now, in all fairness, I went back and I listened to that.
Yeah.
And it's very obvious that I'm joking.
Oh. Like,
yes, because like, you Cam, a second before, you pitched Sun Kang as playing Yeoman Rand.
Oh, I was serious.
Okay.
Well, dead serious.
All right. To me, it is very clear that I was joking about that, calling him a delight. But I had originally pitched, yeah, him as playing a Klingon, though.
Right.
So,
and he may have been a delight. And I talked about this a little while back. I said the perfect way to use Harry Mudd would have been in those movies because it's a different timeline. You can do whatever you want.
Exactly. Yeah. So. Well, look, they made a South Asian villain into a pasty white British man for some reason in Star Trek Into Darkness.
Thank God for alternate timelines.
Yeah. Okay. Cam, any other thoughts about Discovery before we move on to some of the other things going on in Star Trek?
There was one thing. It's not actually about Discovery. It's okay. the announcement there will be a post show called Talking Trek.
Yeah.
Attached to Discovery. We've seen, you know, the offshoots of this before. Talking Dead. What was the Breaking Bad one called?
It was Talking Bad.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And there was a Bates Motel one, too. I can't remember what it was called. But, you know,
Talking Bates. No, Talking Motel. No, these are the most generically named sort of things.
Yeah. I mean, what is your take on these shows?
I think they're, like, I've actually watched a couple of the Talking Dead.
Mm-hmm. And I've watched the Talking Bad one.
Yeah, they're pretty awful to sit through. You get absolutely no interesting insights from them. It's pretty much people just, it's essentially Chris Hardwick saying like, wow, and then recapping what we just saw.
Yeah.
Going, wow, I can't believe that. I'm just,
they'll bring on a couple of the actors and be like, how great was that? And
that
like,
was awesome.
So much fun.
It's like, what do you get out of this sort of stuff? Who are these people watching it? I think people watch it because they're hoping, clinging on to hope that you get some sort of like cutting sort of remark or something very insightful.
Or backstory, like creatively speaking, how things happened. Or
I've never seen any of that.
No.
And I'm not looking forward to this. I think as you and I are probably going to have to watch it just to keep up with.
Or at least make fun of it.
I think we'll be making fun of it, though. But I'm curious as to who they get to host it.
Yeah.
Because I wonder if we'll get a lot of chances to make fun of the hosts in... I don't know. I'm not going to say that you and I have never made mistakes, but I'm waiting to laugh at some of the... Whoever they get to host may not have as much knowledge of Star Trek as they should if they really want to pick this apart. So.
Right. And these shows are made for the general viewer.
Yeah.
So, you know what? Fine. I can't say that I'll be interested in watching it every week, but I mean, I understand the reasoning for it in the marketplace. And I do think that it is good to have people who don't have the knowledge of the minutiae of Star Trek have an opportunity to watch something that maybe increases their appreciation for it.
Okay.
Because, a show like this, Talking Trek, is aimed at more the casual viewer.
Okay, well, let's say I don't know, what would your dream show be for like a post-show sort of talking Trek sort of thing? Like, what would it involve?
Okay, well, Vince Gilligan was doing podcasts on Breaking Bad when it was on TV, where he would really go in depth on the episodes.
Yeah, Ron Moore would do that for Battlestar Galactica as well.
Right.
Yeah.
I would like to see maybe like a hour-long format where the creator, who wants to do it, don't force it on creators. Don't force David Lynch to go on for an hour after the Twin Peaks reboot to talk about the episode for an hour, because he's not going to want to talk about it.
Or the Coen brothers.
Sure.
Or Michael Mann. I'm just listing off all the worst commentary tracks I've ever listened to.
Right. Don't force people to do it, but if... You know, someone behind Discovery, and at this point there's 20 producers, so I don't know who wants to talk about it. But if some of them want to talk about each episode, give them that platform of half an hour to talk about in depth about the episode, bring on guest stars or, you know, stars of the show or whatever, writers, and just talk about what. Because we've seen on a lot of the Blu-rays for TNG, Enterprise, etc., when you put these group of people together, they could actually be really entertaining. It's not dry.
My thought process is, like, I would want them to dig into the minutiae.
Yeah.
I know it's geared for general audiences, so we're not going to get that, but I'd like to hear about the thought process about why you included this name of an alien that we first heard about on Enterprise, and why that was kind of an important or significant thing. Those kind of little things. If they could have, like, old, like, archive clips of Next Generation and say, like, oh, see how this shot is kind of a callback to that shot from Next Generation? You know, those sorts of things I think would be fascinating.
Use it as a bit of a casual history lesson. Like, say, like, we chose to bring in this alien. And this alien you first saw in this episode. Maybe have a clip from an original series episode in which they appeared, so that maybe the casual viewer who's interested in getting to Star Trek doesn't have to wade through 80 episodes of the original series. They can go, oh, I'll go watch that episode.
Yeah,
you know, break it down for people to potentially find episodes that, you know, they wouldn't necessarily know where to look.
Realistically, I think we're going to have to get used to some sort of Jiminy Glick character saying, wow.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay. Anyways, Cam, what should we be talking about next here?
Well, why don't we talk about another TV trailer that hit? One that, I have to be honest, came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And just like, what? What the hell is this? And this is The Orville, the new Seth MacFarlane-produced show, which is basically a spoof of Star Trek.
Yeah, it looks very much like his version of Star Trek The Next Generation. I think the reason why we're bringing this up in this current state of Star Trek is you and I actually brought up the idea of Seth MacFarlane perhaps shepherding the next franchise, not necessarily being like a creator or showrunner, but he is like a producer with a lot of clout, and he's also... Look at some of the behind-the-scenes featurettes on your Blu-rays. Seth MacFarlane is a huge Star Trek fan, and you can tell by The Orville, this is clearly his kind of comedic ode to the Next Generation.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. You know, you put him in charge of a Star Trek show, he has the clout to protect it.
Yes.
And Seth MacFarlane, I think, would be driven nuts if, you know, like, the network suits wanted to meddle with what the rules of Star Trek were. Like, I think it would actually bother him a lot.
Oh, absolutely.
So he would be a good shepherd for Star Trek in a lot of ways.
As for The Orville itself, Cam, what do you think?
Oh, man. People were so... their applause for this was rapturous online. And,
did it make you laugh?
No.
Yeah, I didn't find it funny.
No.
To me, it just looked like an SNL parody without any, like, funny jokes or something?
I mean, look, I have two strikes against me with this.
Okay.
One, we reviewed Galaxy Quest on the podcast a while back.
Yeah.
I think it's fine. It's not a movie that I love in any way, shape, or form. Oh, yeah. I've seen it twice. I don't think I'll probably ever watch it again.
Oh, really? I could see myself watching it again.
It's cute.
Yeah, I'd call it cute.
But it's not something that I think is particularly that hilarious in any way. But, and I also don't really like Seth MacFarlane comedy. I don't watch any of his shows. I've seen bits of the, or watched episodes of all of them, pretty much, except for the Cleveland show, I think. And I didn't like any of them, really.
Yeah.
I didn't like Ted. I didn't like A Million Ways to Die in the West. And so you're asking me, like, do I find it funny? Well, no. I mean, I just don't think I'm predisposed at all to like Seth MacFarlane comedy. I don't find him funny. And, you know, seeing his starring performance in A Million Ways to Die in the West, like, I'm not excited to see him headlining a show.
Yeah.
And so The Orville really is offering me nothing that would appeal to me.
But what do you think about the fans that are out there saying that The Orville is clearly carrying the torch for Star Trek much more so than Star Trek Discovery based on the trailers?
Well, I will say this. It's very much sticking to the tone and, well, not tone. It's comedic, obviously, but more the it looks like TNG to a certain degree, right? It's giving fans, I think a lot of fans want TNG. That's what they want. They don't necessarily want a new iteration of Star Trek. They want TNG back. Because TNG is by far and away the most popular Star Trek, at least with, I think, modern fandom. And so this is the closest thing to TNG they have. I think it's as simple as that.
I find some Star Trek fans have a tough time looking to the future,
right?
Despite it being a science fiction series about the future, but they have a tough time letting go about what they really liked, you know. And
to be fair to them, though, and I will, you know, be fair to those TNG fans, is a lot of those people fell in love with TNG, and probably maybe felt stung sitting, you know, seeing Voyager and Enterprise, two shows. Like I like Enterprise quite a lot, and Voyager, I think there's some good stuff there, but neither of them live up to what TNG was.
Well, believe me, it took me 5 seasons to really get into DS9.
Yeah.
And then I go back and I watch the early seasons. I'm just like, damn, like I should have been really appreciating it from much earlier on. Same with Enterprise. Like it took me like a long time to get into Enterprise. And now I really, really appreciate that series. So it's funny, like, and I came into the franchise through Next Generation. And I would not, I would say, yeah, DS9 is my favorite now. So I'm, you know, kind of made a big blanket statement about Star Trek fans having a tough time letting go, which I think is still true to a certain degree, but I understand why people are loving the Orville.
Right.
Would you... Okay, let's say Star Trek Discovery looked like a big ripoff of Next Generation. It took place in the same era, same uniforms, and it was just on a different ship.
Right.
What do you think fan reaction would have been like, though? Would they have been more elated than what we saw with Discovery?
Maybe,
yeah.
I don't really know.
Okay. Well, yeah, I'm asking you a tough question, sir.
Yeah, I don't really have an answer. I don't know.
Okay.
What do you think?
I think there would have been less controversy, perhaps sparked from reaction. You know, I think more positive reaction. Even to me, I think that would have been egregious. It's like, let's move forward, and not necessarily to another forward in the, you know, a century, but like move forward in storytelling.
Right.
So.
I think the Orville is also aided in the sense that not only does it have a lot of the visual cues of Star Trek Next Generation, it also has a lot of personnel from Star Trek on it. We see Penny Johnson from DS9 is in it. We see Brian George. And then on behind the camera, you've got episodes directed by Brandon Braga, Jonathan Frakes, and Robert Duncan McNeil. And it's produced by David A. Goodman, who oversaw Enterprise for a lot of seasons. So they're saying we are Star Trek friendly.
Yes.
Now, here's the question.
How many episodes does this last?
Yes. How long does this show last?
I think it'll get 13 episodes in.
Do you think it lasts more than one season?
No.
I don't think so either. I don't.
So,
like, is there an audience for this show?
Not on broadcast television.
No.
Yeah. Look, if this is a cable show or on a streaming service, I would say, sure, it's got a hope. But I just don't think... What was the last successful space opera on TV?
Firefly, wasn't it? Well, no. big success, Tyler.
Well,
on Fox, no less.
Yeah, I would have to say it was Battlestar Galactica, and that ended 9 years ago, I think. So it's like, I don't know, guys.
Although I will say, you know, the comedy stylings of The Big Bang Theory may have paved the way for a show like this. Maybe.
There's comedy in The Big Bang Theory?
I know.
Okay, if you say so.
But that, you know, the comedy for that is about, I think, comparable lines.
Okay. So you and I will watch the Orville. We'll give it at least the pilot episode a shot and see if there's potential there.
And we'll talk about it here, I think.
Yeah. I think, look, it's so obviously an ode to Next Generation. It would be silly of us not to at least, you know, talk about it once it premieres. You know?
Right, for sure.
I don't think we're going to be doing week-to-week full-length podcast episodes all about the Orville.
That's our separate podcast.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, I wouldn't mind you know, watching the premiere episode and discussing all these little nods to Next Generation or how it compares and, you know, whatever. Okay.
Definitely. Anyways. I hope it's better than I think it is.
So, Cam, what's the next thing that we should be talking about here with regards to the current state of Star Trek?
Well, I think next we should talk about a little project that seems to exist in various states of existence, and that is Star Trek 4.
Is there anything to talk about, Cam? Well, okay, what do we know?
No.
Chris Pine, Zach Quinto, and Chris Hemsworth, who played George Kirk, Jim Kirk's father in Star Trek 2009, they're all signed on. Beyond that, we know that Simon Pegg and Doug Jung, they took a photo of themselves behind a keyboard back in December.
Right.
And those were the two that wrote
a keyboard like a keytar.
Yes. They're just rocking out.
Yeah, they're releasing a disco album of Star Trek remixes.
But and we should say that those were the writers behind Star Trek Beyond.
Yeah.
So that's about all we know at this point.
Yeah, there's been some quotes, like Zachary Quinto said it's far from a guarantee it's going to happen, but he hopes it does. Chris Pine has said he'd be down as long as they call him. Like, he said he'll come back every time they call him, which yeah. was kind of a surprise, actually, because I don't know. I mean, I think it was projection on my part, but I always kind of got the vibe that maybe Chris Pine was kind of like, I'm good to go.
I never got that from him.
No. Maybe it's because he just never seemed particularly interested in sort of the fandom, you know, in sort of having any sort of relationship with the fandom in any way. So I don't know. Like, it seemed like some of the others were much more embracing of that.
I think he likes the character, though. I think he genuinely likes the character, and he wants to keep doing adventures. And why not? Like, Shatner did this into his 60s. Chris Pine wants to keep cashing those paychecks.
For sure. Yeah, and he's great in the role. Like, I was actually really excited to hear that quote from him, because it means that he's interested in seeing the life cycle of a character, you know, of this character who we all love. Like, you know, Kirk is such an amazing icon, and I think he's perfect casting. So, you've got those two kind of saying like, hey, we'd love to do it. I have no idea.
Yeah. Well, Scott Movie Mance, I think he was on the Engage Star Trek podcast a few months ago, and I forget what he was attending. Maybe it was like CinemaCon or something like that, but he seemed to get the feeling that there was some desire from Paramount to go forward.
Yeah, I mean, you have to look it on paper. Star Trek Beyond made $130 million less worldwide than Star Trek Into Darkness, which isn't encouraging for a studio. I mean, usually they say $400 million is the kind of the rough unofficial number for a movie getting a sequel. $400 million worldwide. Like, that's what it took for Alien Covenant or for Pacific Rim. Now, Star Trek Beyond didn't make that. And
it's a whole different era compared when Star Trek First Contact made like $92 million and it was like a smashing success.
Yeah, I know. It's a whole different world.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I have to believe it's not encouraging. But I thought it would be maybe interesting to talk, because look, we don't really know anything about Star Trek 4 other than they have a great idea, apparently. They want to do it, and it's just a question of whether the money men give them the okay. So I thought it'd be more interesting to look at it from some different angles. And let's just start with, what do you think the lessons learned from Beyond were?
Lessons learned from Beyond? You're putting me on the spot here.
I know.
Because I thought that it was a decent film.
Yes.
Didn't blow me away. I thought it was nice enough.
Were there any lessons to take away from its underperforming? Was it
no,
that it just...
You know, I just think it came out in a weird summer. Yeah. And I don't think the marketing was that great. We discussed that as well as Into Darkness. I don't think the Into Darkness marketing was that great. But look, it was the highest grossing Star Trek film of all time, and the reviews are very positive. I don't think fan reaction was very positive, though.
Right.
I think fan reaction to Beyond was more positive, but... Do you ever hear any fans talking about Beyond, you know, less
Not
than a
really.
Year later?
And I've actually just recently, Star Trek Beyond finally kind of hit Netflix in Canada here.
Yeah.
So I've talked to a lot of people who've caught up with it late.
Okay.
You know, coworkers, friends, what have you, who are not Star Trek fans, but had seen the other J.J. Abrams movies. And, you know, I asked them, you know, what they thought. And their take is almost always a universal, like, it was fine.
Yeah.
That is not really a great... you know, that's not a great reaction. That does not spell like, boy, they can't wait to see the next one. Like, they really feel like they missed a boat not seeing this one.
Yeah. Okay. So maybe the takeaway should be make something far more explosive, or
I don't know.
I don't know.
The thing is, they spent like $180 million on Star Trek Beyond, which is when you hear that number and you look at what's on the screen versus some of the other blockbusters, you know, you look at Guardians of the Galaxy 2, which cost a very similar kind of number. The visual wonder and oomph you're seeing on screen for one versus the other is very, very different. So I think Star Trek 4 needs to, if they don't want to cut the budget, which they may do, they may greenlight a fourth one with a reduced budget, in which case it's going to be a different type of movie. It's not going to be probably a summer blockbuster. It'll probably be released a different time of year, which I think actually might have been a smarter move for Beyond, to be released in like March or something.
Yeah.
Maybe February. But if they want to go bigger, you've got to compete in that avenue. You have to make a movie that looks like something people want to see on the big screen, sadly.
What would make you excited for Star Trek 4?
I don't know that it's Chris Hemsworth. I don't know that that's something that excites me, but I'm not a casual viewer, maybe that will be exciting to them for some reason.
Yeah.
I would like to see, I guess, something that looked like something I hadn't seen before, which definitely Into Darkness and Beyond did not market to me.
Okay. For me, I like your idea of having something like a little bit more intimate. You know, if you're going to go scale down on the budget, make it a more intimate, like ship in a bottle sort of story.
Where you don't have to, you know, make $400 million to be profitable.
Yeah. I don't know. Have some hard sci-fi elements. One of the things that we've been missing from the Kelvinverse, though, is like crazy alien scientists.
Yeah.
You know, that's such a, maybe it's a bit of a cliche for Star Trek, but I don't know, you can bring something in, do something cool with that, have some sort of hard sci-fi element, takes place on the ship. I would love to explore the ship even more. You know? It's a brand new ship. It's now going to be the Enterprise A. So I'm down for that. Very briefly, what do you do about Chekhov at this point?
I think you just have him get transferred to the ship from Wrath of Khan.
Yeah, the Reliant.
Bring in a new character.
Well, I think it's going to be
Jayla?
Sophie Batella.
Probably.
Yeah,
probably.
Sophia Batella, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's cool. Okay. Whatever they want to do, I trust them. Yeah. Because I think they've earned it at this point. I just would like to see them. I think, Beyond was a solid double, but I would like to see them, if this is the last one, with the way box office is going, it might be their send-off movie. I'd like to see them go out strong like Star Trek VI did with the original crew.
Oh, yeah.
There was one other thing I want to mention, though, and that's these J.J. Abrams movies have been, in a lot of ways, reactive franchise installments where each one kind of reacts to trends going on at the time. And I know I was reading a report in Hollywood Reporter not too long ago that said every studio right now is desperate to find their Rogue One. Which is something where they can market the universe, but they don't have to pay to bring the cast back. They can tell stories within that universe. And that's why, you know, we're getting the Labyrinth universe movie. It was just greenlit recently.
Sure.
Could we see a world where Paramount decides to do another Star Trek franchise in the universe, but not have to pay Chris Pine, Zach Quinto, etc.?
I just don't think that, you know, general audiences care about Star Trek that much.
Yeah.
But you've got such iconic figures like Spock and Kirk in the Enterprise, then that's enough to rope in audiences. And the reason Into Darkness did so well is because of international audiences who previously could never care less about Star Trek before. So,
yeah,
you know, I don't think it would work necessarily for Star Trek. But
it will for Labyrinth.
Yeah, well, I'm intrigued by seeing all these Transformers spinoffs that'll be coming down the pike. But whatever. Yeah,
no kidding. Okay, well, why don't we move into some smaller stories? One is the Deep Space Nine documentary, What We Left Behind.
Cam, I never get involved with crowdfunding campaigns. This Indiegogo campaign, though, I spent way more money than I ever anticipated.
Too. Me too.
I would. But this made me so excited for Deep Space Nine, and to me, it was so exhilarating to see that this fandom has not died off, and it actually seems to be growing. And the Indiegogo campaign raised just shy of $650,000.
Yeah,
their goal was $150,000.
Right.
I remember I'm gonna brag here. I was actually one of the first people to actually contribute. I think I was like number 80 or something like that. So
right.
I got like this special lapel pin set that. I don't know. Anyways, for like a special price. Anyway.
Right.
So I was so delighted to give my money away. What are your overall thoughts? What does this mean for kind of the legacy of Deep Space Nine to see such reaction here?
Well, it shows definitely that this cult show has definitely got a very, very, very passionate fan base.
Yes.
I don't know what it means for Deep Space Nine, though. I don't know if this means anything outside of the immediate fandom.
Well, I don't think it's going to bring about, you know, Chris Pine and Zach Quinto throwing the towel, so they're going to, like, reboot the series with a Deep Space Nine caster.
No, but you know the way that people recognize TOS or TNG? Like, they're referred to in terms of mainstream media mentioning them.
Yeah.
I don't think Deep Space Nine is ever going to get that.
No.
Like, you kind of hope something like this kind of raises a bit of awareness. Like, what is this show? And people are really passionate about it. I don't think that's going to happen. But I'm just really, really happy that the fans all came out, really supported this. And we're hopefully going to get a high-quality documentary. I mean, the fact we live in a world where there's going to be a high-quality documentary about Deep Space Nine is exciting.
It makes me feel validated in my fandom to a certain way that, like, I don't feel crazy for liking this show so much.
Yeah.
It seems as if, you know, other fans are out there. What do you think, though? You know, we should mention a couple things. Avery Brooks does not appear that he will be involved with this.
Right.
I think, you know, it's safe to say, just, and this is based on what we've heard from, say, Sir Lofton at a convention, but I think he's been having some health issues, and so I totally understand his lack of involvement. But I'm excited to see five of the writers got together, and they broke a story for a hypothetical season 8 premiere. I think that's what I'm most excited to see myself personally.
Yeah, me too, because a lot of the anecdotes I would imagine are going to be things we've heard at cons. Yeah. But I am looking forward to, like, a real deep dive into why DS9 matters so much. And it's such a sleeper show, and that I can totally see why it went maybe a little less noticed when it was on originally. But you look at it now, it's so relevant. It's more relevant than a lot of the TNG, TOS shows, you know, the ones that are definitely more popular. But, like, DS9 is the one that feels almost more timeless than any of them.
And it was not it has a reputation of being in kind of the dark series, but it wasn't afraid to go and take a deep dive into very touchy political matters.
Yeah.
And sometimes that can bug me if it's done in a very heavy-handed way, but I'm watching these Deep Space Nine episodes that were produced, you know, 20, 25 years ago, and it's so bizarre to see how applicable things are to the current state of affairs in the world. You, Andy Chan, and I, we all reviewed Past Tense Parts 1 and 2 just a few months ago, back in January. And just watching that one, I was just like, holy smokes. Like, I can't believe, you know, how, you know, applicable it is to what's going on right now.
Right.
So, and look, maybe we'll discuss that a little bit in next week's episode, but I don't know. I love this reaction. We should also mention that we will be getting some upgraded Blu-ray scenes included in this documentary, including some space shots. I'm very excited to see.
I was going to joke. I hope they're all scenes of characters walking down hallways.
They're very dark corridors on Terraknar.
Yeah. I'm just looking forward to seeing Vedic Barayal in high def.
You and me, baby. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Any closing thoughts on What We Left Behind?
I just can't wait to see it. And it's supposed to come out hopefully February 2018.
Yeah.
And you know, I'll have a podcast episode talking about that when it comes out. And I just cannot wait to watch it and to get my Kira t-shirt.
Oh, my lapel pins, they're supposed to come by July. So
I've got those coming too.
Yeah, I'll be wearing those to the next convention.
Well, it's going to be real snazzy.
Okay.
Maybe just lastly, let's just talk about, it was announced this week that McFarlane Toys has become a licensee for Star Trek.
Yeah, I'm interested with that. I was actually kind of worried that Diamond Select, that they were going out the door, essentially. Mm-hmm. But they came out and said that, no, we've re-upped our license as well. So we'll have multiple licensees doing figures, essentially.
Right.
I've really been impressed with Diamond Select, what they've put out there. I have such nostalgia for, say, the Playmates figures that we had in the 90s, but I can understand why maybe we're moving on from that. But what do you make of McFarlane not getting involved here?
Well, to me, this says that Star Trek, from this point forward, they've kind of given up on marketing to kids.
Sure.
You know, putting it in the Toys R Us toy aisle, essentially, and that they're going more boutique with these things.
I don't think the Kelvinverse stuff sold very well among kids. So.
I doubt it. And, I mean, how well do you think those Enterprise figures sold?
Yeah.
You know, I think you got a Reed for free, didn't you?
Yeah, I won it during, like, a trivia contest.
Yeah.
Like, and it was in its package, and I think, what do you think it probably cost at the time?
Probably, like, $15.99 or something.
$15?
I think so.
Okay. I figure maybe at least like 18 or so.
Sure. Around that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway.
But to me, this, you know, they talked about how in the spring of 2018, they'll be releasing a line of 7-inch figures, including Kirk and Picard with all their sort of iconic accessories into stores with, you know, like display packaging and all this sort of stuff. This says to me, they're marketing to collectors. They've given up on mainstream, you know, toy popularity for Star Trek, which is fine. Like, I love, you know, those figures, like the ones that are essentially like statues. Like, there's the classic Kirk fighting Khan one and the Spock. That's the type of stuff I like to buy. So, hey, it benefits me.
Oh, I'm more into the kids stuff because, as you know, I've got that big collection of those Funko vinyl pop figures.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. So, I think one of the first things announced was they're going to do some sort of new phaser or something like that. I've never been so much into the weapons, although I do have a Bat'leth
true.
In my bedroom, which I'm very pleased with. I don't know, any particular sort of items that you'd want to see, or what are your thoughts about potential Star Trek Discovery toys?
To be honest, I don't really care about Discovery toys.
Yeah.
I'm more of a nostalgic toy guy. Like, I really can't wait to see, like, McFarlane toys in the past have done some amazing stuff. Like, they did these 3D movie posters. Like, I have a Jaws one at home and a Nightmare on Elm Street. They put out, like, the movie Monsters line, and I got, like, the Ash from Evil Dead 2 figure. Like, I love the detailed sculpting they do. So I'm really looking forward to some, and this is total cliche of me to say, TOS aliens.
Okay.
Like, I cannot wait to get my hands on, like, a McFarlane Gorn figure.
Yeah, I knew you were going to say Gorn.
Or Baylock or, Vina? You know, Greena, yeah. Mugatu, some, you know, things like that. That to me is beyond exciting because I know that they're going to put an obsessive amount of attention to detail into it.
What kind of Baylock though? Like the puppet or the kid?
I would love to get the puppet, but it's the kid like peeking out from like inside. Okay. Like that to me would be the dream.
I just want like a Clint Howard toy, period. Baby Clint Howard.
I have one.
I know you
already.
Do. Yeah.
But they did make one for Playmates.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, a more detailed one would be awesome.
Okay. Well, Cameron?
Well, why don't we just say at the end of the episode, I think we did this at least the last year. How are your feelings about the franchise right now? How do they compare to last year?
I think, you know, there's a certain amount of excitement that I had last year where we were about to get Star Trek Beyond. I believe we first had news that Star Trek, a new Star Trek series would be on its way.
I believe we had, yeah.
Yeah, so I was very, I believe I'd never felt so excited for the future of the franchise. You know what, I guess the old cliche goes is that wanting something is far more desirable than having something.
Right.
You know, so I don't know, I feel we have a lot to look forward to. I'm anticipating Star Trek Discovery, but I'm not feeling as excited as I did last year, though.
Right. I kind of am in the same boat where I feel like a lot of the excitement of these things, where we had tangible evidence that they were coming, like Star Trek Beyond or Discovery, fueled this fire of like, I cannot wait to see these things. But now that I've seen, like, you know, this teasers for Discovery, I'm like, it's definitely coming. It kind of, like, it's more exciting when you don't know what it is. When it's just, like, in your head, you're making up all these potential ideas as to what this thing could look like. And then you see it and you're like, yeah, it looks fine, you know, or it looks, I can't wait to watch it, but I don't know.
Well, do you think if they edited the teaser, the Discovery teaser, in a different way, maybe took away some of the lame dialogue and different musical cues. Based on the visuals that we saw, do you think you could have been more excited?
I don't think so.
No? Okay.
I think they're very limited in what they want to market because just the fact that most of the cast isn't even there.
Yeah.
I tend to feel like if you have the footage, it'll speak for itself. You know, you look at like that first Inception teaser.
Yeah.
They showed very little.
Yeah.
And wow. You know what I mean? So it's like, if you have the footage, it'll do the selling for you. And at least with what I saw there, I don't know that. So with what they want to market, the limited clips they to show.
Because I think it's being stymied by the fact that I think it's a very, very conscious decision on the part of the marketing team that we're only seeing a little bit of
it. And there's been some things that I'm not going to reveal or anything because I don't know if people have dug deep in any way.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's some stuff with Captain Lorco that I don't think they want to market. But, you know, it's out there if you really want to look for it. You know, I'm optimistic for Star Trek Discovery because I have to be, because I want to talk about it every week and I want to be excited about it. But I wish I had something more solid, at least in mind, for what is going to happen with Star Trek 4.
Okay.
But, you know, I'm maybe a little less excited. You know, last year we had the 50th and all that. Like, we were flying high. Yeah. It was a very exciting time to be alive. This year, we're kind of like,
we're spoiled.
Yeah, there's more nervousness, I think, surrounding Discovery than there was probably about even Beyond.
Yeah.
So, you know, fingers crossed. You know, as Star Trek fans, you always got to be optimistic because Star Trek is a franchise of peaks and valleys. So hopefully we're heading towards a peak, not a valley.
I think we've been in a valley for quite some time, though, with a little couple of dales that we've been able to walk on top of, you know, with some of the J.J. Abrams movies. But I think we've been suffering without Star Trek on TV for far too long. I have enough faith that Discovery will give us a little bit what we need. I'm cautiously optimistic.
Yeah, anything that gives us a weekly platform to talk about Star Trek as a fan community is exciting.
Yeah.
You know, the movies tend to be a one and done. You see the movie opening weekend, you talk about it, and people kind of die off. Whereas with the show, we can talk about it week to week and how what each episode meant and where it's going to go forward and the themes, etc. That's exciting to me. So I can't wait.
Before we log off, Tyler, Patrick Johnson swung by the studio to pipe in with a special transmission to talk about the Discovery trailer. So why don't we jump over to that conversation?
Patrick, you just watched the Star Trek Discovery trailer for the first time. I'm actually curious, why did it take you so long to get to it?
I don't know, I'm a bad person.
Yeah, well, I knew that already. But, okay.
Too many sports?
Cam and I were curious about what's your reaction after seeing that Star Trek Discovery trailer? What popped out to you?
Well, it's technologically looks pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
Nice effects. You know, I enjoy the fact that they're saying, hey, it's going to be a snazzy look anyway.
What is this series about, Patrick?
Not really sure. Something to do with Klingons, maybe, and some weird alien race. And then there's a dude at the end who can only sense the oncoming of death, which seems like an unusual skill to have.
Is he our new Spock Data? Our outsider character that speaks to humanity?
I hope not.
I think he is.
You think so?
Yeah. Or else that little robot that we saw just a half-second glimpse of.
I enjoyed the sort of the initial appearance, I guess, of it. Is it Sarek? I guess.
Yeah.
As a hologram. So I'm sitting here thinking, oh, he's the Emperor.
Oh, yes. From Enterprise.
It's a crossover from Star Wars. What's going on?
No, I don't know. He's Snoke.
It looks interesting.
Okay.
Could be fun. I don't know.
Damning with faint praise, though.
Does it excite you?
Yeah, sure.
Does
yes.
it?
Yes. Yeah, it does. It's new. It's Star Trek.
Ah.
It's new Star Trek.
But
I get excited about many trailers, usually when I shouldn't.
Okay. I it's funny just because Cam and I, we spent a while discussing it, and I don't think either one of us were blown away.
No, I'm not blown away. Yeah. I will fully acknowledge that I'm not blown away. I am not terrified.
Yeah, you know,
I'm not terrified that it's just going to be awful.
Those are my words as well.
So,
all right.
I don't know what that is.
Well,
faint praise? That is faint praise, yeah. I suppose.
Well, at this point, is there anything in it that you really don't like? Other than the
well,
the
I will admit I'm slightly disappointed that they have gone with what looked like sort of ripoffs of the Kirk, that jacket he was wearing in.
Captain Crunch jacket from Star Trek Beyond.
Thank you. Slightly disappointed they just didn't wear I know you guys talked about uniforms recently.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
The whatever that felt, you know, the Christopher Pike, you know. Era the like, in the cage
with
like,
the big collars and
the
everything.
Big collars right. And I'm a bit disappointed about that
because you are aware that this takes place in the same era as the cage.
Well, that's what I mean. Yeah. It's 10 years before Kirk.
Okay,
so
Cam loves the uniforms.
Of course he does.
I do.
Yeah. So
I don't know. I think that I worry the uniforms are maybe a bit too busy. There's too much going on.
Can you imagine a world, though, where they put them in exact replicas of the cage outfits?
That'd be great.
Would it draw in new audiences?
Yeah, how would new audiences
audiences wouldn't care. I don't think they care about these uniforms. Do people really watch shows for uniforms?
Only
people like us care about that.
If you ask the TV executives, they're going over every little inch.
I know.
Debating all these things. So.
Yeah. Patrick, I'm curious. Now, this is on CBS All Access, right? Mm-hmm. Do you think there will be any new viewers?
Well, does anybody have CBS All Access?
No. Well, right? I mean, in the U.S. it's CBS All Access. Yeah. The rest of the world, it's on Netflix. But
right. Not in Canada, though.
No, Space Network here.
Yeah.
But in the U.S., if it's on a network like CBS All Access, is it going to get any new viewers?
Well, I mean, they're hoping to sell subscriptions to CBS All Access, aren't they?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They're really hoping.
I think what they're counting on is drawing in all these hardcore Star Trek fans to CBS All Access.
It's a weird one because it is sort of an opening salvo in them saying, hey, we can be like Netflix too.
Right.
And I'm like, okay, that's an interesting choice. I mean, the key with Netflix is they've just done really good programs.
Right.
And, you know, yes, they've scooped up, you know, Arrested Development and Full House and whatever old brands that people our age love.
Right. Yeah.
Are you a big Fuller House kind of guy?
No.
I actually watched half of the pilot episode and it was garbage.
I never watched
it. It was hot trash. It was embarrassing.
But you can move along and there's other good quality programming. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so, it seems a little too much like, hey, let's throw all our eggs in one basket. That would be my one observation. Or an odd, it's an odd collection of eggs to throw in one basket, I suppose.
Does CBS All Access like greenlight any other like major series that they're hyping?
Yeah, The Good Fight.
No one's hyping that.
No,
I know it exists. But.
The TV critics are fans of that show. And there's, I think, a couple other series, but like by hype.
Yeah.
How would you define that? Netflix does not hype any of their series, though.
No, that's true. But Netflix is something that's readily available in most homes versus CBS All Access isn't.
I think a more apt comparison would be Hulu. Sure. That's really more the model that CBS All Access is mm-hmm. taking on. Do you ever hear any hype over Hulu shows,
no,
originals?
No, or Amazon Prime shows, really. Other than the Emmys or something.
I was going to say, I hear hype about Amazon Prime shows, and I often wonder, I'm like, can I get that?
Well, that's the problem. Amazon Prime, Amazon Prime in Canada, it just became available back in December, and so I subscribed to it. The problem was that there's so many other licensing agreements that Amazon had done in Canada that you don't get nearly as much programming up here as you would.
So it'll take a while.
It's going to take a while. So I don't know. I think that they work on a different model.
Right.
So I don't know if this hype thing is look, I understand the business model here with Star Trek. They're going to be driving people in and watching. Again and again, it makes sense. Like from a business perspective,
it's a lot. It's a loss leader, sure. I mean, you'll get people. You will get some hardcore fans in. Mm-hmm. You better have some other stuff around it.
Well, but okay, no. But here's the business model, though. Essentially, the entire series has been paid for through Netflix licensing agreements internationally.
Oh,
well then,
oh, okay.
So whatever they make off CBS All Access subscriptions plus advertisements. Oh, okay. It's all just gravy from here on
That's
out.
Smart then.
So if they can just keep financing it this way. I think CBS...
So then why do I care about CBS All Access?
Yeah, I don't know, Cam. You're the one who asked the question.
I know. There's a lot of people talking about CBS All Access.
Well, look, here's one thing.
This is the official opinion.
I'm trying to appeal to the U.S. audience, Tyler. I'm not content to just Canada. I want the world.
Canada's the only jurisdiction where it will actually air on, you know, regular television, though.
Right.
The rest of the world, it's either going to be on Netflix or CBS All Access. We're going to have it on the Space Channel up here. I think CTV will air it, the pilot, on the first go, perhaps. But yeah, I don't know. It'll be a different viewing experience. I think I'm going to have to end up resubscribing to cable in order to watch it week to week. And then, I don't know. We'll see. Okay, sir, any closing thoughts on the Star Trek Discovery trailer?
It's nice to have Star Trek back on TV.
My thoughts exactly. I look forward to doing it week to week. What we'll do, Patrick, we'll get you back on the show. Would you want to sit in with us for an episode review on Star Trek Discovery?
I guess I could figure that out, sure.
Okay. No, well,
I don't have CBS All Access, but I do have Netflix.
I think the plan is, like, Cam, you and I will watch it as it airs and with our guests week to week, and then we'll immediately record an episode.
Cool.
So, yeah. Hope you've cleared your calendar.
Oh, wide open.
Okay. Excellent. Okay. Well, Patrick, thanks for beaming in.
So I think on that note, our assignment is complete. If you enjoyed listening to this podcast, we want to hear from you. Send your thoughts and feedback to subspacetransmissionspod@gmail.com. Tyler, we're also on Facebook. Where are we?
Yeah, go to facebook.com/subspacepod or just search for Subspace Transmissions in Facebook. Yeah, we're posting a lot of exclusive content there. Follow us. We're not going to flood your feed, but if you like the show, and believe me, it's a free show. We put a lot of hard work into it. Just push the like button. That's all we ask. And maybe if you want to, you can share it with some people you think that would like it as well.
Tyler, what are we doing next week?
Yeah, we are going to be doing a review of the DS9 two-parter Homefront and Paradise Lost. It's been a while since I've seen this episode, so I'm very curious to see what my reaction is going to be.
I can't wait to find out.
Yeah.
Okay, you can also reach us on the Twitter. You can find me at Cam V as in Ville, comma, or Smith.
I don't get it.
Orville.
Oh. Wow. Wow. Anyway, you can find me at Reportin. That's Reporton. N is in Nauru's biological determination.
Okay, so until next time, the arena is closed.
Transfer complete.